Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the Newsbusters podcast. Coming up today, we've got an interview with Derek Hunter, podcaster, talk radio host, author. But first, we should discuss there was another mass shooting at a supermarket in Boulder, Colorado. At a supermarket. I feel this because I love supermarkets. If there's a place I would get caught, it's at the supermarket. So it is another senseless act of violence. And to me, the worst part of it is the way that the news media gets out the lecture podiums and starts talking about how terrible this country is. What's wrong with America? This keeps happening. We can't pass laws to crack down on guns. I mean, how many times have we seen this routine going back to the 90s when they actually did ban quote-unquote assault weapons? And even when there was a ban on so-called assault weapons, there were still murders with guns. But to the liberal media, curbing the guns is always the obvious solution. I just can't stand the way that it just dominates the news. And I would say on some level, when you have mass shootings this closely together, what they ought to all be discussing on their news programs is, when we do a massive rush to the scene and cover this heavily, do we inspire copycats? It's not that they haven't asked that question, but they certainly haven't asked that question yet in 2021. And they can say, well, we don't glorify the shooters. No, but you massively cover the act. And that's understandable. It's shocking. On the other hand, you could be a cynic and say, click, 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 this is great for ratings. This sells papers. It reminds me of the old Don Henley song, Dirty Laundry. I know that dates me. Google tells me 1983. I knew it was right in there, freshman year in college for me. Eric Shiner was trying to say it was 84. I said, no. His next record was 84. The way that old people argue. I was right, of course. But there's a line in there where he said, got the bubble-headed bleach blonde, comes on at 5. She will tell you about the plane crash with a gleam in her eye. It's interesting when people die. Give us dirty laundry. We are very interested in people dying, especially in violent crime. That gets our attention. It's easy for each and every one of us to grasp the horror of that. And that is one of the ways the news business operates, especially the TV news business. This is why they use this little slogan, if it bleeds, it leads. That has absolutely been the case here out of Boulder, Colorado. 10 people dead, including a policeman and father of 7. Well, there's been lots of outrage. Let's start with what we've been talking about on Newsbusters. Christine Marsh notes on CNN, Don Lemon had a 20-minute tirade / lecture / consciousness-raising session about how America sucks because we can't pass gun control. And this has sort of been the CNN theme. I saw it yesterday and tweeted this out at 2 p.m., or at the 2 p.m. hour. Breonna Keeler comes in, and she basically says, well, in this country, we find it acceptable to shoot people in supermarkets. and high schools and dance clubs and movie theaters. Because if we haven't passed gun control yet, then we're all fine with murder in the United States. That's some way to appeal to your audience. CNN, we think you're a bunch of horrible monsters. John Berman this morning on New Day. More cynicism about how America stinks. Don Lemon, 10 p.m. last night, quoting from Michelle Obama, the sage of America. And apparently, this becomes racial, where Don Lemon said about conservatives, I'm believing in general, they don't have the courage to stand up for our lives, but they want to take away your vote. The Republicans don't think Black Lives Matter. That's the pitch. And the Republicans want to take away your vote. This is the sort of line they use because they have this extremely racially insulting line that the Republicans' restrictive voter measures, their repressive voting legislation, now being considered in state legislatures, would suggest perhaps somebody should have to present a voter ID before they vote. How racist! The assumption here is that somehow Black people can't get a voter ID. They can't get a driver's license or a picture ID. Just the same way that they come out and say, well, are Black people underserved by the vaccines because they don't know how to get online and sign up? Now, if a Republican says that, I think we all understand the way they would take that. But this is the left. This is the Democrats who always assume that their own voting base, I mean, let's face it, the African-American vote is a very, very strong Democrat vote. And yet they can be insulted by their own politicians. You people don't know how to use a computer or a cell phone. But this is the way that Don Lemon's going to come on. This is the way Breonna Keeler is going to come on and the way that John Berman comes on. They call this a news network. It stopped being a news network quite a while ago. Certainly under Jeff Zucker, who the liberals like to blame for the stardom of Donald Trump. You made The Apprentice show. You foisted him on all of us. And it's like he's trying to make up for it. It's obviously a network-wide directive when all these people come on with these pompous editorials, throwing their lightning bolts, if you want to call them that. I don't find them persuasive. I find them arrogant and obnoxious. Yeah, then Philip Mudd comes on and says we don't have gun control because we're a nation full of arrogance. Oh, the irony. CNN trying to denounce the rest of the country for arrogance. Like arrogance isn't on display hour on the hour on CNN with these anchors and their pompous Edward R. Murrow impressions. So the column today was on, speaking of taking your vote away, on the new bills that they call voting rights bills. H.R. 1, and then the Senate version, S.1, which they call the For the People Act. I kind of go into one of the recent New York Times stories on this and sort of look at the way that they use their terminology. The Democrats are trying to pass a landmark expansion of voting rights nationwide. And the Republicans are for restrictive or repressive voting legislation. I mean, the adjectives these people use clearly show you which side they're favoring. It is not hard to read stories like this and figure out whose side is being promoted. This was a 35-paragraph article, and only one paragraph in this was a conservative/Republican suggesting the bill was a power grab for the Dems. But before they got to that argument, they had this paragraph about how the Republicans are caught up in these false conspiracy theories about Trump winning and their belief in non-existent voter fraud. So even when the Republican gets a chance to say about 20 words in print, there's a huge sort of disclaimer coming ahead of it. You know, the other 30-plus paragraphs in this article are all about how this is a glorious moment for voting rights advocates. With, you know, their group names are like Black Voters Matter. They are transparently trying to make it easier for voter fraud. Why would you remove voter ID? We're not going to have any voter ID. We're not going to have any signature verification on mail-in voting. What does that look like? What might result from this? I'm sorry, no. We have 30-plus articles suggesting that Biden needs to be Lyndon Baines Johnson and end electoral racism. That's the impression you get from reading the New York Times. There is a lot of concern in the conservative movement that what the Democrats are trying to do with this bill, just like what they're trying to do by getting statehood for the District of Columbia and maybe statehood for Puerto Rico, is this whole idea that, oh, we're going to build this electoral system in such a way that the Republicans won't win. You know, they want to ban the Electoral College. They all get upset, like socialist Seth Meyers. Wyoming has too much power. Wyoming doesn't need two senators. I want two senators for Manhattan. The way that the Democrats and the left think is, we are the ones who are correct, and we are the ones that should have all the power. And we will pass our bills by dominating the liberal, quote-unquote, news media and the so-called objective social media platforms. There's a reason why conservatives get a little bit scared about what the Democrats are trying to pass. And they're trying to pass this Voting Expansion Act in a really sort of quiet way. There's not a lot of chatter about it on the news. The night that they passed this in the House, H.R. 1, there was no mention of it on ABC, CBS, or NBC. They're going to try to sneak this thing through. And maybe if the Senate has a real bottleneck on this, where they're going to try again to abolish the filibuster, maybe we'll get some news coverage. But I think we know sort of the tone and the tenor of what may come with that. We will be back in a minute.
MRC-store.com.
Pro-gun, pro-life, pro-God, and pro-America? Welcome to the Pro Shop.
MRC-store.com.
T-shirts, hoodies, goodies, and much more.
MRC-store.com.
The only store that always offers conservatives more.
That's MRC-store.com.
Log on, log in, and help the Media Research Center while shopping for great gear today.
MRC-store.com.
Joining us now on the Newsbusters podcast is Derek Hunter, author, columnist, radio host, and podcaster. I've had the pleasure of being a guest on Derek's podcast, so it's only fair I subject him to the Newsbusters podcast. He's been quite nice to us over the years, and he had a book in 2018 called Outrage Incorporated. It's still out there to be read. And I know that hopefully we helped with that as well. So good afternoon, Derek.
Thank you for having me, Tim. Although now it seems as though you're only having me to return the favor of my having had you on the podcast. It kind of cheapens it a little bit. I'm just kidding. You guys did help move the book. It's still in print, which is a miracle in and of itself. And it is, I love Newsbusters. I love the Media Research Center. So anytime you guys need anything from me, I'm down. Especially if you need me to be a special guest on your cruise. I hear you.
Now, is there a second book in the offing at any point?
I am toying with a proposal, and I've been talking to my editor of the first book. They have right of first refusal. Nobody needs to know that. It's just with two kids, 3 and 2 years old, a radio show, a podcast, and 4 columns a week at Town Hall. There isn't a whole lot of hours left in the day.
I'm getting there. I hear you. So the hot topic today is the horrible supermarket shooting in Boulder, but sort of the hot topic on conservative Twitter was the way that you could just count on people like the race and inclusion editor at USA Today to say
there's three things I'd hate to have. I'd be embarrassed to have on my resume, being the race editor or the inclusion editor, and frankly, working at USA Today. All three of those things would embarrass me to have them on my resume.
I just thought it was, I'm sorry, in this tragic situation, still had to laugh at the idea.
Always the white guy. It's always the white guy. Always. That's what she wrote.
Yeah.
Like, are you, it's, you've been in this, you've been in the news business and you've been in the news observation business since the earth cooled.
Yeah. Almost.
And you've seen this evolve over time where you wanted to be first, but being first, you also had to be right. And now it's just be first and we'll fix it in post. We'll correct it later. We'll addend the piece later. We won't even make note of it sometimes. Just go ahead and throw it out there. And now Twitter, which is a great tool for journalists and it's a great tool for news consumers because you can find out things. It's also wildly irresponsible because they just go and throw it's like the world's worst pasta chef. They're throwing everything at the wall, seeing what sticks. And when they're done, they pick the noodles that stuck and they ignore the 90% of the noodles that are rotting behind the stove. It's like, you can't do that if you're going to be a responsible journalist. But the people who went into journalism, this is one of the things I wrote about in my book, is the worst thing that happened in journalism was Woodward and Bernstein, was Watergate. Mm. They all look back on it and they go, oh, this is great, this is great. But that created the journalist as celebrity. And they all wanted that celebrity. They wanted the money and the fame and the women that those guys got. And so they went into journalism to make a difference and change the world and make money and get famous. And their editors for a time were like, you can't just throw things. You can't just report. You have to fact check it. You can't have one anonymous source says with nothing to back it up. Well, the editors that had standards have retired. The people who wanted to be heroes are now editors. And now there's a new group that is even worse than the last one coming in. And their editors are letting them get away with it. And now we're in that weird transition phase where the really nutty ones who might as well be activists, they have activist and journalist in their bios, for example. They don't even try to hide it most of the times. They're becoming the editors. So I fear what's coming next. And you guys are never going to get any sleep because there's never going to be a moment of peace when you shouldn't be examining what these people are doing.
Well, and there is this whole trend in media where now we need to appoint a race and inclusion editor. The Washington Post made such a big deal out of, we're going to have an editor for race. We're going to assign a whole team underneath the race editor to do race stories and only one kind of race stories. And
you know, if you want to do those stories, fine. I don't know who the audience is for that, who wants to read about how horrible they are or the country is or whatever. But I suspect, just based on my reading of the news, that it bleeds over into making sure that other news stories that aren't related to race are written in a way that is inclusive, or things that can even tangentially be associated with race. We need to find an angle. We need to address the race issue in this story X that has nothing to do with race. I think that's kind of what it is. It's the free radical cell that metastasizes throughout the entire body of journalism. And what's amazing to me is that the bosses are not only letting it happen, they're living in fear of it, of anybody criticizing it, of them criticizing it, of them having criticized the concept 20 years ago coming to light. There are probably people buying up every copy of their high school yearbook if their quote was somehow deemed offensive now, so that they can destroy it before the woke mob finds it.
Yeah. See Alexi McCammond. I mean,
yes.
I mean,
I do love seeing the Frankenstein's monster go back and destroy the castle, though. You know, Teen Vogue is ground zero for wokeness.
Yes.
Alexi McCammond has remained silent as conservative after all these people were outraged over her, have remained silent as conservative after conservative have been canceled and attacked and smeared and lied about and destroyed. And when it happens to one of their own, they're all like, this is an outrage. No, the concept is wrong, but it's just as wrong no matter who the target is. And I'm not going to share in your outrage about her that because you don't share in the outrage against somebody who is thinks differently than you. So I love it when chickens come home to roost, to quote the Reverend Wright.
Yeah, I mean, it is actually the least shocking media property you can imagine that somebody would be woked right out is Teen Vogue.
She didn't even get in. That's the funny part. She didn't even get in. They woked the door.
They woked the door. I like that. So the one of the things we were writing about in Newsbusters this morning was that based on the Boulder shooting, the CBS This Morning had Madam Vice President on. They kept using those terms. Madam Vice President, please share with us your opinion. But their dominant line of questioning today was, can we have executive action on guns? They're so unhappy with having a 50-50 Senate that they can't destroy the filibuster yet, that they're basically foisting on her. We had Moms Demand Action on here, and they said, you can do stuff. So, I mean, I suppose this is their idea of tough questioning, is always demanding more from the left.
Well, Gayle King is not exactly somebody you look to for a tough interview.
Right.
If she weren't friends with Oprah, the name Gayle King would be like, was that the lady yelling at the garbage can outside the grocery store? Nobody would know who Gayle King is. But yes, Madam Vice President. CBS had a show called Madam Secretary. Then didn't she become Madam President or whatever? So maybe that's just a branding thing that they keep on pounding on that. But I saw a bunch of that interview. It really was a softball interview. It's not that they're upset that they have a 50-50 Senate. It's that they don't have a benevolent dictatorship that they want. That's it. You know, executive action under Donald Trump in desk drawers in Democrat attorney generals across the state, or attorneys generals across the state, they still have pre-drafted lawsuits just in case Trump did something. They would immediately go to the judges in 20 states, and one of the liberal judges would get an injunction that would impact the nation. So every executive action that Donald Trump took was challenged immediately and enjoined from ever going into place, or at least for a long period of time, by people who breathe and reported on by people who breathed a sigh of relief when that happened. Now those very same people are calling for executive action on everything. The Second Amendment is one sentence long. It's not very complicated. And in the left, Joy Reid, which is a clip I got from you, is going on about how, well, at the beginning it says for a well-regulated militia being necessary, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, but it says at the end, the right of the people to keep and bear arms. The founding fathers weren't lazy with their language.
Right.
They didn't just go, we'll figure it out later. They didn't treat it like journalism does now. They said the rights of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, which part of that is vague. It didn't say the rights of the well-regulated militia members. There was no standing army at the time. There was no national army at the time. They don't care. It's hard to tell, and you would know better than I because you consume this stuff for a living, you poor bastard. But it's hard to know whether or not these people are ignorant or they're hoping their audience is in order to serve the agenda. Which do you think it is?
It's a little of both. I mean, I don't think that Gayle King has a master's in federal state relations or constitutional law.
She got a master's in Oprah studies, a PhD in Oprah studies. That's it.
I mean, to me, it's like if we had a truly objective media, a nonpartisan media, somebody that the entire country could rely on, to be a referee. I mean, the idea, the metaphor of a referee today is laughable. But it, you would think that they would stand up for things like the filibuster, a careful balance of federalism, states' rights, federal rights. You'd expect them to be institutionalists, and they're not that at all. They are, as we always can see, they travel with the Democrat liberal mob, with whatever the Democrat liberal mob wants, and in whatever means or methods the Democrat liberal mob feels like it, using.
It really is amazing to watch them. They define the terms of debate for the media and for Republicans oftentimes. But like, for example, the idea of the For the People Act. Mm. This is a voting rights bill. It's a voting rights. And any attempt to change that or to do something like in the state of Georgia where they're trying to institute some security measures in voting, integrity measures, it is voter suppression. Now, I expect that from Stacey Abrams. I don't expect that from Lester Holt. Yet that's the verbiage that we get out of Lester Holt's mouth. And it, like, my question is always, and apparently this doesn't occur in newsrooms, that if the vote is so sacrosanct that, you know, nothing, even criminals must be able to vote while in prison, and illegal aliens must be met with voter registration cards at the southern border, and asking somebody to reach into their pocket and pull out their driver's license is such an affront to humanity and their sacred right to vote, then why isn't it worth a basic measure to protect the integrity of the vote? If it's so damned important that people vote, then why isn't protecting the integrity of it important at all? That's a question that is never asked, and it's something that is framed as just this side of attending a Nazi rally if you even suggest that we should take some measures to ensure the integrity of the vote.
I think maybe we should create some fake news that the Proud Boys voted 2 and 3 times apiece so that they can understand the notion of your vote getting canceled. It's not just that you have the right to vote. It's that your vote doesn't get canceled by a fraudulent vote. That's the principle.
You'd have to think that they'd have to care, though, Tim. This is a smokescreen. This is it. You know, you've never seen a magician, maybe Teller in Penn and Teller, but that's because Penn does all the talking. You've never seen a magician who isn't talking constantly or flailing around, or there's some thunderous music or whatever and flashes and bangs everywhere. That's because they're trying to distract you from what they're really doing. Right? That's what the left does. They just throw out buzzwords to try and distract you from what they're really doing. Oh, we're trying to protect people's rights to vote. Well, what about the integrity? Doesn't matter. It's voter suppression. And what lost in all this is the fact that they literally, with a straight face, will say voter ID laws disenfranchise black voters. Like, you're telling me that black people can't get driver's licenses? Because if you burn, maybe there are 9 people in the whole country that don't have a driver's license and can't get one. There's some people who want to be off the grid so far that they never have one, and okay, that's fine. But if you burned 1/10 the calories they're fighting to prevent voter ID laws on finding those 9 people in the country who don't have photo IDs and getting them a photo ID, not only would that problem be solved, you would actively and accurately and immeasurably improve their lives, because they can't travel, they can't go into a lot of places, they can't open a bank account, which leads them to take any check that they get if they can get a job without a photo ID, leads them to take any check they want to one of the quote-unquote predatory lenders that Democrats are always railing against, that charge huge percentages to cash a check because they're taking a flyer. They don't know who this person is. They got to take a chunk of that money just in case the check bounces. They would improve people's lives immeasurably if they tried to get people photo IDs, not just from a voting security perspective, but from a general life perspective. But again, if you solve problems, how are Democrats going to run on solving those problems? They're not interested. It's not that they're incapable. Even the dumbest Democrat will figure out what I'm saying is true. It's that what I'm saying isn't advantageous to them, because then it wipes clean the objections to photo IDs for voting.
I did a Nexus search the other day for voter suppression, and what I found was MSNBC is talking about this hour on the hour. Nicole Wallace won't shut up about it. Brian Williams, voter suppression. They just can't stop it. And to some extent, it's not just an accusation. I think it begins to sound like a voter turnout tactic. You know, they are trying to take your vote. Don Lemon last night, they're taking it. They're trying to take away your vote, those Republicans. Well, what's that supposed to get you to do? It's supposed to get you to go out and vote for the Democrats.
Of course, your colleague there, Curtis Houck, is that how you pronounce his last name? He tweeted out a series of screen captures from Don Lemon's show last night of the Chirons. It read like... It made Ted Kaczynski seem like J.K. Rowling. Like, oh, Ted makes sense. Because Don Lemon is living... It was also helped that it was aided with screen captures of Don Lemon's face at the particular moment, which is a thing of beauty. I don't know if he chose those exact frames, but they live in a different world, and they are not about to let reality seep into it. They live in fear of... Like, Media Matters for America. They watch Fox News constantly, and Oliver Darcy, who looks like a rejected Cabbage Patch doll, and Brian Stelter, who's a weeble with arms. They watch Fox News constantly, not because they want to. They watch it so they can complain about it and dissuade their audiences from, out of curiosity, maybe coming across something on social media and going, oh, maybe I'll check this out, see what this is. It's not we watch Fox. They'll tell you we watch Fox News so you don't have to. But realistically, they watch Fox News so you won't, because they don't want you to get a contrary opinion.
I assume that's probably the same accusation they would lob at us. But I mean, the problem is always liberals have so many more choices. Now, I need to break in.
Well, you guys post full clips. You guys give everything context. Yeah. Aaron Rupar has become a verb because he's so bad at pulling. You've been Rupard, which in Urban Dictionary means basically you're just making stuff up and you're lying and you're fraud. And he does that constantly. Somebody will talk for 3 minutes, give a 3-minute quote, and he's got 27 seconds. Perfectly mined and stopped right before it gives it any context. And he sets the narrative, sadly, this unshaven weirdo in his basement over at Vox News sets the agenda for so much of the liberal intelligentsia on social media. It's scary.
Well, this is it is true that social media used to be something that the regular media would use. Like in the Obama era, they would all run around and say, look at this gorgeous tweet of Barack and Michelle hugging after he won re-election. Now we're in a state where it feels like that the news media takes all of their marching orders from the social media. They end up being echoes of Twitter. Certainly, I mean, an anti-echo of Trump's Twitter. Twitter's running the country. I mean, and that's where, yes, you'd worry about Vox.
I know Vox. It's founded by the Daily Kos guy and Ezra Klein. Like, are you kidding me? Who thinks that's honest? But if most newsrooms could cook up a spoonful of Twitter and inject it between their toes, they absolutely would. They believe it's real life because it's the life you construct for yourself. You get to choose who you follow. And if you don't like somebody, you can mute them. You don't have to check your mentions. I rarely check my mentions because I don't care. I upset liberals. So what? It's a day that ends in Y. I couldn't care less. They're going to call me some name. But you create your own reality in there, and it can be really difficult. I force myself to follow some liberals and some liberal outlets because I want to know the whole picture. There are people in the newsroom that their Twitter feeds are the biggest echo chamber and confirmation setting you could ever imagine. I like National Review. I used to love National Review. Now I like National Review. But back when the Corner blog was, you know, like their big thing that they were pushing all the time, it got to be unreadable. Why? Not because the content was bad or because the writing was bad. It wasn't. It was because it became the inter-office Slack. It became, Jonah is responding to so-and-so. And like, I don't want to go back and read 15 posts to find out what the heck this is about.
Right.
How about you just tell me what's going on? You know, and maybe in a paragraph, maybe five paragraphs, but how about you just give me something self-contained rather than this world you've created?
I think
and that's what media is now.
I think they heard you on that, though. If you go to the corner on National Review Online today, it is different than it was. I was on there for a bit, for a year or two. I was, Catherine Lopez let me in the back door.
But it became the comment section of a blog rather than a blog.
Yeah.
It was like, they're arguing in the comment section. No, wait, this is the blog. Well, what's going on here?
Hopefully the quality of commentary was better than you sometimes get in the comment section.
It was better, but it was like, I don't know what they're talking about by post 15. And I'm not going to go back and read another 15 posts to find out what this zinger Jonah Goldberg came up with was all about.
Now, I want to get to a couple of things as we wrap up. I wanted to state to people who don't listen to the radio in Baltimore, and of course we can get Baltimore radio pretty good in the car down here. You are on WCBM, 680 AM in Baltimore, and as of April 5, you are taking the coveted noon to 3 spot, the Limbaugh spot. You're going to be the Baltimore version.
I am from noon until 3. I was lucky enough the day after Thanksgiving last year to fill in for Rush. And it was a thrill of a lifetime. He created this industry. And you're sitting there and you got your headphones on. You got a microphone in front of you. And Snerdly, who's a friend of mine, is talking to me. And then all of a sudden, My City Was Gone starts. And you've heard that song 10,000 times. But you've never heard it through headphones when you're sitting in front of a microphone. And it takes a few notes before you go, oh my God, this is me. Yeah. When I start talking, that's it. And you got to wait for them to say, and it gets to the guitar part, you know exactly how long it goes. And you're like, oh my God, tens of millions of people are about to be disappointed. And then you just go, because the other choice is you don't go and you come across like an idiot. But it was terrifying and exhilarating, and the thrill of my professional career. It was horrible that we lost him far too soon. But, you know, it's a business and it has to go on.
Yeah.
And they need something there. And I was successful. Number one from 9 till noon. So it's kind of a risk, but you know, as long as I get paid, I don't care.
Yeah.
But like, it's like, would you like to do this? I said, well, you mean would I like to sleep in a little bit more? Yeah, I would like to sleep in a little bit more, and let's give it a shot. What the heck? So you only live once, and life is about risks, and you really only regret the thing. If you're a decent person, you only regret the things you didn't try. So I'm giving it a shot.
So
I also still will keep the podcast, the Derek Hunter podcast,
yes,
as well. So you will be bothered on that. The radio, I don't do guests all that often. Podcasts, once a week, I do guests.
And yes, I have SoundCloud on my phone for that.
Awesome.
I can put that on, plug my little auxiliary cord in. The I wanted to talk to you for a minute.
Upgrade to Bluetooth, man. Bluetooth.
Yeah. We've got Bluetooth.
Have your son show you how to do it.
We've got Bluetooth in the Honda. Well, yeah, but we have Bluetooth in the Honda. It drives me nuts. Then I can't get back to regular radio because I'm 57. Anyway.
Is your VCR still blinking 12 o'clock?
It's a DVD player. Come on.
There's a button, for crying out loud. It's just a button.
Since you are in Baltimore, you must have to do some local issues. So I have to ask you the question. What is the deal with Governor Hogan? And why would anyone suggest he's presidential material, at least as a Republican?
Well, actually, I don't have to do local. So thank God for that. So they let me do whatever I want. And I do national. But if something massive comes up, like Governor Hogan steps in a huge steaming pile of Hogan, then I will talk about it. Who they're talking about him for president. By that, I assume you mean him or somebody he's paying. Because there's
probably the Washington
no
Post.
Except for maybe an intern at the Post and somebody in the mailroom at MSNBC who are floating this idea. I know Larry Hogan. I like Larry Hogan. He, when we got married, he tweeted out congratulations. When we had our first kid, he tweeted out congratulations. But he won't come on anywhere near my show now because I thought he fumbled COVID massively.
Larry Hogan, then he did wear the darn mask.
Yeah. to conservatives in Maryland, which there aren't many.
Right.
He has been a big disappointment because he came in, he has a mandate, and Maryland is one of, if not the most powerful governorships in the country. They can write the budget. Now, the legislature can kind of move money around and fudge on the edges, but they can't radically change the budget. He could have implemented a really, truly conservative budget as governor, because we only have a 90-day legislature. He didn't. He built up a lot of goodwill and capital by getting elected, but he never spent any of it. He didn't help any, it's not just that he didn't vote for Donald Trump twice and he actively was critical of Donald Trump. It's that I can't remember a Republican, particularly a conservative in the state, who he campaigned for. Huh. Did you ever see him with Kimberly Klasick?
Yeah.
Long shot campaign, but there was no harm to him. He can't run for re-election. It's not like it's really going to hurt my re-election chance. He's term limited out. And he sat on the sidelines in the last election. Mm. And some races, even just local races, that he might have been able to make a difference. You can't say because it didn't happen. But it didn't happen. So that's the problem.
Yeah.
And I don't know what he thought. Because it was 8 years of this, or it's going to be 8 years of this, building up this political capital, having goodwill of the people, having, you know, high poll numbers. There's no denying his high poll numbers. But if you don't do anything with it, what good is it? And he didn't seem to do it. It's not like he was, well, I'm going to save it to really push through this conservative piece of legislation, because that doesn't happen. The Democrats just override all his vetoes left and right.
Yeah.
He might as well not be there because he's not using his budgetary power. Everything else he's overridden on, and he's not campaigning for anybody. So it's a huge disappointment. It's not like he's made many mistakes legislatively, like signed a bad bill or something. He's done a couple, but not many. It's that he hasn't done anything else. He's more of a, I will react to what happens to me kind of governor, rather than I am going to make things happen kind of governor.
Yeah, I mean, it to me, it's like you have states like Maryland or state like Massachusetts that elects a Republican governor, and you can't tell that anything Republican happened.
Well, the guy in Massachusetts doesn't even really pretend to be a conservative, though. Larry Hogan pretends to be a conservative. He'll tell you how conservative he is. He wrote in Ronald Reagan in his that's super. That's great. Who'd you vote for in 1980, though?
One last thing. I wanted to draw attention to one particular column you wrote for Town Hall that I thought was especially interesting. And that was when you asked the question, where are all the girls in boys' sports? we are all talking about how trans women are going to badly affect girls' sports. Nobody's talking about how trans men are going to dominate men's athletics.
No one's even talking about them participating in it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. We're told if you say Bruce Jenner, a SWAT team will break into your house and arrest you for hate crime if you're in the state of California. But we're told constantly trans women are women. Well, then you wouldn't need the trans part because women covers it. But that's beside the point. If trans women are women and trans men are men, then you either have to believe that exactly zero trans men have any interest in sports whatsoever, or there might be physical differences at the hormonal level, bone density, muscle mass, and things like that, that show that there is a significant difference when it comes to men and women in biology. And just because you click your heels together three times and wish something that isn't was doesn't change that reality. Yeah, you had the one girl in college football who was a kicker. She was on a horrible team, and it was just to get publicity, and it worked. Congratulations. You had Manuel Rayom in the 90s and saw hockey play a little bit of goalie, and she was terrible because she wasn't big enough, she wasn't fast enough to stop an NHL slap shot. But in reality, if biology doesn't matter, if it's all how you identify, first of all, I asked the question, how would you, I don't know what it feels like to be Tim Graham, let alone a woman. There's no way for me. I can describe to you the taste of the sandwich I just had. It wouldn't, I could use words that mean something to me, but they could mean something completely different to you. So how we can sit there and go, well, you feel like a woman or you feel like a man. You have no idea how another human being feels about anything, let alone about their gender or their sex or anything like that. Like, I get you can tell me what you're attracted to because you're attracted to it. But I feel as though I've always been a woman. No, it's impossible. That is impossible. So, but if it's true, there would be some trans boys at least trying out, if not dominating, but at least trying out. And you would think the left would raise them on their shoulders saying, look, these trans boys are playing boys' sports and they're doing just well. They're doing great, but there's no female or trans male home run king or trans male field goal kicker or quarterback or point guard or anything like that. So it's either there are physiological differences between the genders, or by some weird fluke of nature, while a lot of trans women want to play women's sports, exactly zero trans men want to play boys' sports. Because if somebody didn't make the team, by now there would have been at least a lawsuit. We would have heard about it. I was denied access because of this. And we don't hear anything about it. We don't even hear the question asked.
It's true. And I think that I like what I liked about this is it's always about finding the silences. I mean, we're now, and when the Democrats are in power everywhere, we all have to look at what story are they not doing? What thing are they not outraged about? What are they trying to not let us know is happening? And that's frankly, it's harder than just pointing at Don Lemon and laughing. You know?
It's true. Although that's pretty easy, so it's a bad analogy.
That's kind of the point. I imagine sometimes people are like, yeah, that real tough work there, Newsbusters, point and laugh. But I appreciate you. I appreciate you coming by, and I do encourage people again to check out Outrage Incorporated. I have multiple copies. I could steal Ben's copy. My producer and son's got a copy over there. So thank you.
Unopened, I'm sure. Oh. There'll be a quiz later. Base their raise on a quiz.
Raise? Thank you for coming on. Thank you for listening to the Newsbusters podcast. Come by and see us once, twice, 24 times a day, as many times as you can stand. Thanks.